Upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose Masterforce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from Masterforce today. Check out all our Masterforce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Can't underestimate SB and Sean, breaking through the noise, serving real talk, the genuine choice.
No pretense, no hidden schemes, just sports, passion, fueling dreams. From the field to the court, every play that's made, real takes over fake debates. Turn it up, hear the honest sound, unfiltered sports all year round. Discussions pure, no masquerade, real takes over fake debates. Turn it up. Over fake debates. Real takes. Over fake debates.
Real takes over fake debates.
We are live. SB Talk Sports, Sean Rib. Real takes over fake debates. We coming bigger, we coming better. And this is officially season two of Real Takes Over Fake Debates, Sean. We over 100 plus episodes in. We got a lot of big things in store for the people. But how you feeling about season two, man, of RTOFD, man?
Salute,
how you SB. Feeling today in general, too, my bad.
Feeling good. Feeling good, SB. You know, 2-0 always makes you feel pretty good. But, I know, feeling good, man, and definitely excited for season two. And, you know, I don't know if I've done this enough, but I just want to say again, thank you, man, for asking me to be a part of this journey with you. It's been a pleasure. And, again, just looking forward to continuing and growing and doing what we do, brother.
Yeah, man, I can say the same thing. I appreciate you for joining the show with me, bro. The show has been a blast. We getting better and better, improving. We're going to get bigger and bigger, and part of us getting bigger and bigger. Be on the lookout. Real Takes Over Fake Debates are coming to the audio scene. So you will see us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts. So we're going to get y'all the link when the link come available. I want all you guys to go on there. Give us a good listen when you listen overnight. I know everybody don't want to be on YouTube. Everybody just want to have the headphones on, listening to work on the late night shift. So we have heard what the people have wanted. We're going to give you what you need and what you want. So, but obviously, us coming into these new different dynamic and different scenes, a lot of people don't know about Real Takes Over Fake Debates. Obviously, we are a growing sports platform, and we're just a growing network in general. Because if any other thing you want me and Sean to talk about and do, we could open up the platform for you. Y'all want to do live game play-by-plays, we'll do that. If y'all want to talk about music, entertainment, or if it's a big topic, we can do that. And the phone lines, we'll be coming back soon. We did a couple test runs with the phone line. We're going to bring that too. But we wanted to give y'all the full information, the detail of what Real Takes Over Fake Debate is and who I am, SB Talk Sports, and who Sean is. I could go first with saying what Real Takes Over Fake Debates is. Real Takes Over Fake Debates is pretty much the difference in what we have in sports media or networks in general, where we want to bring real takes, no fake debates, no fake narratives, not just to argue, bringing good conversation, good quality podcasting. We can debate, we can have different opinions, but we're going to bring good quality of it. And that's the whole point, is that we're not just saying nothing just to say nothing. If we truly feel this way, we will tell us how we truly feel, and we will bring facts to back it up. And, you know, just me, I'm SB. A lot of people know me as SB Talk Sports, or just SB, or real name Shaq Barnes, media trade graduate, learned a lot of things in media, worked with the Windy City Bulls. I did things with Chicago Bears. I did things with a lot of minor league teams. So I'm just up here to build my own network and talk good sports just because I'm a fan of it. What about you, Sean? What's Real Takes Over Fake Debates to you, and who is Sean Webb to the people?
You know, Real Takes Over Fake Debates, like you said, SB, it's true sports talk. Mm-hmm. It's we can disagree. Without being disagreeable, It is always going to come from a place of respect. Mm-hmm. But certainly we want to, you know, do deep dives into some things. We talk about stories and situations that may not always get their due diligence on certain media platforms, because that's just the nature of media. We're not about being salacious. We're about, you know, keeping it real, and certainly, but also, you know, bringing some, I like to call it edutainment. You know, it's, we can entertain, but we can also educate. So we generally don't say things on here that, like you said, SB, we can't back up with fact, data, stats, some historical reference, something. So that's how we get down. And as far as me, I'm Sean Webb. Been doing this for a while. Done the TV thing. I've done some work in radio. I've done certainly some you know, podcasting in the past. Just, you know, honestly, you know, love talking sports, but more expressly, you know, love having intellectual back and forth and yes. and sharing it with the audience. And we hope that the audience does enjoy it and the audience does participate, because we do pay attention to the chat and mm-hmm. we do answer, you know, questions and comments from the chat. So just want to say appreciate everyone for their support and look forward to getting to know the audience as well.
Yes, I'm looking forward to getting on the audience. The more and more people join, the more and more you're part of the RTOFD family. But Sean, enough of the kumbayas. You know what we're here to do. We're here to talk sports. So make sure you guys like, share, and subscribe and join the RTOFD move. But we got to start with the NFL, Sean. Obviously, we got some NBA later on in the show too. But we got to start NFL week two recap. A lot of things have happened, a lot of upsets. A lot of fans are in an uproar, good and bad. But the biggest story of today is former number one pick, because he was a former number one pick, Bryce Young has been benched by the Panthers, and Andy Dalton will be starting versus the Raiders. Sean, what is your reaction to this? Obviously, the Panthers are off to a slow start, starting 0-2 now. Bryce Young has not thrown a touchdown in either game he has played so far. Played terrible against the Chargers. He threw a bad pass in double coverage. Did he also play bad against the Saints? You know, you could argue maybe both teams are good quality defense, but this last game with the Chargers was horrendous. Went 18 for 26, only 84 yards. What did that one? I told you that one interception that he threw was clearly a bad pass. Was this the right call to bench Bryce Young at this point in time?
I don't know if it was the right call, SB, to be very honest with you. But I will say this. You know, we talk all the time about situation and where a guy goes or where a person goes matters. The situation matters.
I swear.
What I can say is that Bryce Young has played 19 NFL games. 19. In 19 games, he's had three different head coaches, different offensive coordinators, different schemes. He's had different general managers, because the general manager that drafted him is no longer there. They got a new GM. That's not a conducive situation to developing a quarterback or developing anybody, but especially a quarterback that you drafted. I know a lot of people are going to look and say, oh, Bryce Young's a bust and blah, blah, blah. Let's not do that.
They calling for it, though, Sean. They calling for it right now.
Yeah, but that's a determination that is thrown out way too quickly. Mm-hmm. We don't know what Bryce Young is in the NFL, because Bryce Young, as I said earlier, has played in 19 NFL games. 19.
Yeah.
Three head coaches.
That's troubling for a quarterback. Yeah. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, so that's troublesome. That's a lot of upheaval. That's a lot of change. I'd be curious to see if Bryce Young got in a situation, whether in Carolina or someplace else, where he had more organizational stability and got an opportunity to develop, because part of it is development. Everybody's going to say, oh, you know, Alabama and blah, blah, blah. At Alabama, mm-hmm. what did they have? They had stability.
Stability.
Right? Nick Saban is stability, right?
Yes.
Everything around him was fairly stable. So for him to go to a situation where there's a lot of instability, and I'm going to be very honest about David Tepper, the owner. He is not a patient person. He is someone who wants to win immediately. And I don't know if he's necessarily been patient since purchasing majority ownership of that team to go through the process of how you build a winner. It does not generally happen overnight.
Is he the owner that threw the drink on somebody, right? That's him, right? I know it was the Panthers owner. It was him, right?
Yes.
He talked about, he ain't got no patience at all, obviously. You worth that much money, you throw a drinking on regular, you're lucky he didn't get sued. If he didn't get sued, I really looked that deep into the story. So, yeah, you can tell that he don't have no patience in general.
Right. And so so it starts at the top. Now, again, mm-hmm. a lot of times, you know, always I do this training with folks, and I always tell people sometimes it's about getting the right people on the right seats on the bus. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's you got people on the bus, but are they in the right seat? Are they in the right place for that bus to move forward? It's great to have an owner. Every team should have an owner because, again, you know, you need somebody with the deep pockets. But does that owner understand what they are there to do? Because you have some owners who are very meddlesome, who get in the middle of everything.
That's true.
You know, and don't always allow people to do their jobs. But also, did you bring in the right people? Did you hire the right people? Did you say, hey, how is an organization? Are we set up to do this? There's a guy who I love, and I hope one day we'll get to have him on our podcast, Louis Riddick. He consistently pushes this thing about, and this is someone who's worked in front offices in the NFL. He constantly pushes this thing of that organizational excellence does not just come from one person, right? It's top to bottom. And are you buttoned up as an organization to say, hey, listen, we're going to bring this young guy. We're going to bring this young person in. This person is not a perfect, ready-made, ready to go. We have to be okay going through the process to develop this person. But if we do what we're supposed to do, and conversely, they're doing what they're supposed to do, we believe we'll have the right person to lead us, right?
Do you think it hit a little bit harder now because they got the new GM and Bryce Young wasn't his guy? So now it's like, is it making an easier transition to like maybe get rid of Bryce because it's not his guy with the new GM?
I mean, I think that may factor in the summer, but also you got a new head coach. This new head coach was not a part of drafting Bryce Young. This new head coach was in Tampa last year as the offensive coordinator. He got this job in part because of the success he had with Geno Smith in Seattle and the success he had with Baker Mayfield last year. And it was believed that, okay, we bring him in. He's going to, you know, help our young quarterback. But two games, like, you know, and again, I've watched enough of those first two games to know, it was not good, right? It was not good. Now, sometimes you make I heard a baseball guy talk about sometimes you make a pitching change, not because the pitcher's terrible. Sometimes it just may not be their day. It may not be their moment. But it doesn't mean they won't have moments in the future. That's what I believe with Bryce Young. Maybe this isn't his moment. Maybe this isn't his time. Maybe he needed this. I hope it doesn't mess with his confidence. I don't think it will, knowing, you know, what we know about him. But, you know, let's be real. The Panthers as an organization have to take some ownership for this. It ain't just on Bryce Young.
Part of them having to not just being on Bryce Young, because they would have had the number one pick again this year, could have added deep talent around him by trading back with that pick or taking somebody with the number one pick. But even though obviously everybody at the top of the draft was like quarterback heavy, unless they was going to take Marvin Harrison Jr., but obviously Marvin Harrison Jr. would have been in a place of disparity with the Panthers because they needed other things filled up on his team. So, like you said, everybody else got to take accountability. And I like how you said that a good organization, everybody got to be on the same page, top to bottom. When you get a new owner, new GM, new coaches, everything revolving around you, you can tell that it's a bunch of chaos going on in the Carolina Panthers city. And this is dark days and dark times for Carolina. And I do feel bad for Bryce Young because he is a very talented player. He went number one for a reason. And I think another thing that plays a part of how people are ready to give up on Bryce Young is because the guy who was picked right after him is already looking like he could be a possible MVP candidate, or who was my MVP prediction in CJ Stroud, and looked like he took a team in the Texans who was at the top of the draft with a couple years ago. Now they are a playoff contending team, maybe possibly a Super Bowl contending team. So I guess everybody expected Bryce to take off just like how CJ Stroud did, which is not necessarily fair to Bryce Young, because the Panthers did not make the same moves that the Texans did to make the team better. And you could definitely argue that the new coach of the Texans is a big dynamic changer of how good the Texans are. But it sucks, and I don't want to take it away from Bryce Young, but obviously it's just like, I think you will ruin him more if you keep him out there and he has not shown no much improvement. Maybe if Andy Dalton goes out there and shows some progress, maybe that could help out Bryce Young, or it could hurt him. Or if Andy Dalton go out there and play bad, then they can probably realize, hey, it's not just our young guy that's going bad, it's the team around him. But I cannot deny Sean. Obviously, I watched the last game a little bit more closely because he played my Chargers. Yeah, it was a lot of bad reads out there, but also, and I can't get mad at him because it's hard for you to develop when you're in a bad situation too.
Yeah, and again, I think about the thing of CJ Stroud. Mm-hmm. They tied CJ Stroud to D'Amico Ryans. Right.
Yes, they did.
Nick Caserio, the GM, same GM, right? Mm-hmm. Also, what is CJ Stroud in? He's in the second year in the same system with the mm-hmm. same play caller, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to look at last year, but it's that continuity, right? They've added pieces. They added, obviously, Joe Mixon. They added Stephon Diggs on offense, just to name a couple. Mm-hmm. But the primary thing is that they have built a foundation for mm-hmm. CJ Stroud to come in and say, hey, listen, you're our guy. We're going to ride with you, but we're also going to make sure we're doing things to complement you as well. I can't say Carolina's done that for Bryce Young without question. Again, continuity matters. The Texans got the right guy as the head coach. D'Amico Ryans, for me, I view him as a Mike Tomlin type. He is a guy that's going to be there for a very long time as long as the Texans don't get stupid, right?
The
irony of it is, and this is the thing about the ownership, the irony of it is David Tepper was, before he bought the majority share of the Panthers, was a minority owner in Pittsburgh. That organization is the blueprint for organizational stability, right? They figure out what they're going to do. They go with, okay, here's what we want. Here's where we go. When they hire a head coach, you generally know what type of head coach they're looking for, right? They go young, they go defensive minded, and they want generally a leader of men, someone who can rally a group, right? Mm-hmm. That's what they had in Mike Tomlin. That's what they had before in Bill Cowher. That's what they had before in Chuck Knoll. Mm-hmm. Three head coaches in 50 years. When they look for a GM, they want same thing. Scouts, same thing. They understand organizationally how they want to be built, and the Rooneys, who have owned the team forever, stability. They don't make rash decisions. They don't make rush decisions. They generally say, okay, here's where we are. Here's what we believe. Here's where we're trying to go, blah, blah, blah. It's not that they don't want to win. It's they understand it doesn't happen overnight. So I think David Tepper would do better to try to bring some of those principles to the Panthers organization and say, hey, listen, we're going to be patient with this process. Yes, I want to win. As a competitor, yeah, I want to win. But I understand that this is a process, and I'm okay with that.
And you got to remember, this year you actually got your pick. So maybe when your pick go in the top five, which is will go in the top five, it'd be crazy they get the number one pick again. They finish last again. That'd be crazy 3 years in a row. But
well, remember they didn't remember when they drafted Bryce Young. Remember they traded up because they didn't. Right, they were nine up. And they traded up to Chicago. So this would be their second year, you know, being the number one pick. Which again, it happens in the NFL, you know, potentially. But you know, still a long season to go. We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. Let us know what you guys think. Comment down below. and let us know, was benching Bryce Young the right move at this point of time? But also, we got to talk about another number one pick. Obviously, these two guys are kind of connected only because of the organization and the trade. We got Caleb Williams. Obviously, Caleb Williams, first two starts with the Chicago Bears. It did not look as pleasing as everybody wants it to be, which I have a very high, very hard opinion on this one. Obviously, Caleb Williams went 23 for 37, 174 yards, two interceptions. Did not throw his first touchdown yet. Didn't obviously, you remember the game last week where he had under 100 yards and did not throw a touchdown either in week one against the Texans. I mean, not the Texans, I'm sorry, the Titans, when he went 14 for 29, only 93 yards, but he did get the win because the defense came up and showed out. Sean, I'm going to let you go ahead first on this one because what I'm hearing in Chicago, right, is this. Oh, man, Justin Fields, we could have kept Justin Fields above the O-line. Or it's, we let Justin Fields go for this, this obviously the Justin Fields fan base. Or other people saying they're like, you know, why did we spend all these money getting all these weapons just to put Caleb Williams behind the same bad offensive line that Justin Fields had to deal with, and you expected him to just be spectacular? So what is the true problem with Caleb Williams? Is it the Bears O-line? Or is it more deeper than rap where the Bears franchise organization is just where quarterbacks go to be vanquished?
So let me use something here as an example, and this will stick very closely with you, SB. I'm going to a rookie season, NBA rookie season, and I want to give you the stats from the first two games of the rookie season. 16 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds, team won.
Okay.
21 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds, team lost. Those are the first two games of this player's rookie season. Can you guess whose rookie season that is?
You said it's close to me?
Yeah, it'd be close to you.
If it got to be it got to be a Bulls player, then it'd be close to me. Is it Derrick Rose?
No, look behind you.
Oh, Mike. Okay, MJ.
Right, that's his first two games. First two games. His third game against Milwaukee. Third game against Milwaukee. 37 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds. Right? It is a process.
Thank you.
It's a process, right? They're going to be – this is part of being a rookie. There are going to be some games where Caleb Williams looks like that dude consistently. And there are going to be some games where he looks like a rookie. I thought in the first half he played really solid football, right? I thought they did a good job. Shane Waldron did a good job of getting him some easy throws, some easy completions early. They, you know, tried to get him, you know, again, just some quick reads because, again, that Houston pass rush with Danielle Hunter and with Will Anderson were coming. Mario Edwards as well were coming. But I thought they did a good job in the first half of trying to get him into a rhythm, right? Because that's what it is a lot of times with a quarterback. Second half, I thought Houston started making some adjustments, particularly on third down. Houston is not a heavy blitz team. On third down, especially in third and long, they start bringing five guys. And I don't think the protections were good enough, obviously, because they ended up with 7 sacks. And the interceptions, yeah, the interceptions were, you know, again, the first one was really kind of a punt. You know, it was a long throw. And then, of course, late in the game, you got to try to throw to get back in the game. Second interception. This is going to happen because he's a rookie quarterback. And, again, they are trying to figure out, you know, what he can do, what he can take. But also they're playing a really good team on the road, you know, in Texas. You know, so I
mean, well, Texas at home, that's tough.
Texas at home, that's tough. So, again, this is a part of the process. Let's not lose our minds. Again, SB, I know you want to talk about the offensive line. You know, is it the right offensive line for Caleb Williams? That remains to be seen. But seven sacks last night, which, again, I wasn't complaining because Houston's my fantasy defense. But, you know, and the two interceptions, I'm not complaining because Houston's my fantasy defense. But the point is that they got to figure that piece out too, right? Because, again, everybody looked at the situation he walked into, and they looked at the weapons. But the five up front is what makes the difference.
Yes. 100% you hit it right on the head with that. The five up front makes the difference. When your quarterback gets sacked seven times in mid between the game, where your quarterback getting hit so much, you can tell that he's in pain. And the Bears wore their orange jerseys. Caleb Williams left the game with a burgundy orange or a red jersey. That jersey was more dirty. Only people jersey supposed to be dirty, you know, if your O-line did a good job, it's just the O-line. Your quarterback should start the game with a clean jersey and end the game, the jersey should look the same way. When you have things like that happening, especially to a rookie, where you getting hit consistently. Now, it's not even like, you know, when the quarterback throw the ball and you get that little push. No, he was getting destroyed. I seen Caleb Williams get speared like Goldberg style mid-game. So I think, like, how can you expect to see the talent of this rookie where you don't give him time to process or give him time to go through his motion or go through his 1-2 back step, get a good rhythm going? Yes, and you are playing a good team within the Texans at home, like I just said in the first segment before. Like, this is a team that could possibly contend it because off the back of seeing that, oh, we got our quarterback and we got our coach and Ryan's and Stroud. But I'm not giving up on Caleb Williams. I feel like you said, it's only the first two games. And I think the Bears fans in Chicago, like, I get it that you signed all these weapons. You know, you got the DJ Moores, you got the Swift, you got the Keenan Allens, you know, you got Roma Duzier. You got all these weapons, and the defense has been looking good. But it all starts from the quarterback and the line protecting them. You can't do nothing. And also coaches, too, which I think what you brought up about you changing schemes, I think this is going to be the it's going to be a change in coach in Chicago if the offense, especially the offensive coordinator, if things don't change soon. But for me with Caleb, I feel like don't give up on him. Like, people forget, like, Peyton Manning. Go back and look at Peyton Manning rookie stats for a season. He didn't look that good. And he showed promise. But I think it's only because the era we live in, too. Everybody want microwave. I want you to be good day one, fast. It don't happen like that. You got to get this kid time to develop, time to grow. And the Bears need to put this kid in better position to have the confidence and protect him long enough so he can stay on the field, because he's going to get hurt at some point. If Caleb Williams keep getting hit like this, he's going to get hurt. And I guarantee he probably ain't been hit this much ever in his career. And I don't want to say Bears is the organization where quarterbacks go to disappear, but this is a make or break for this franchise on developing a quarterback. You already was 50-50 with Fields, but Fields showed kind of talent a little bit in college, but you can blame Fields. Hey, he can't make a read. But this is a quarterback who had Patrick Mahomes as talent. He was a Heisman winner. He was putting 40-plus touchdowns up in college before he came up. He showed he could make any type of pass. He showed he has the talent. The Bears organization, you have to do better. This is y'all make or break moment for y'all quarterback, or y'all going to be ruined forever, ever.
And I think, too, SB, you brought up Peyton Manning, right? Mm-hmm. We're in the age where people are less interested in being patient with the number one overall pick, right? We talked about earlier Bryce Young, obviously Caleb Williams. When you're the number one overall pick, that's a designation not everybody has, not everybody gets. And particularly when you're the number one overall pick and you're a quarterback. But most of your number one overall picks who are quarterbacks are generally going to a terrible situation.
100%.
Right? A terrible situation. Like, unless a team traded up, right? Mm-hmm. So when the Rams traded up to number one to get Goff, they were trading up from 16 to 1. That meant they were a mid-team. They weren't terrible. They weren't, but they were a mid-team, and they felt like, okay, this guy, Jared Goff, could be our franchise quarterback, right? He led him to a Super Bowl appearance. Obviously didn't win, but, you know, the point is that generally speaking, that's not the case. Normally it's this team is really, really bad, and this is why they have the number one overall pick. The Bears their natural pick last year was 9. Okay, so that meant they weren't a playoff team. They were not a great team. They were a very mediocre team last year. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they made a lot of moves with the roster, bringing in some of the vets they brought in. We get that. I understand that. But this is a process, right? Yeah. This is a process. And like you brought up Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning's rookie stats are not good. Do you know what helped Peyton Manning take off the next year? He had the leading rusher, who was a rookie, mm-hmm. in Edgerrin James. Mm-hmm. His stats, the 2 years that he had Edgerrin James behind him, leading the league in rushing, look at Peyton Manning's stats then, right? Mm-hmm. Edge gets hurt, look at Peyton Manning's stats when Edge is out. So, mm-hmm. and that's not a slight to Peyton Manning. I just want people to understand that as much as we say, oh, it's the quarterback. No, it's what's around you. Mm-hmm. What's around you. Also, what else did Peyton Manning had? He had the pleasure of playing in the same system under Tom Moore his entire time in Indianapolis.
It helps a lot.
He only had two head coaches in Indianapolis, Jim Moore and then Tony Dungy. Tony Dungy didn't come in and say, hey, we're going to change the offensive system. Mm-hmm. No, let's keep the same offensive system. Let's try to do some things to complement the defense within that offensive system, but we're going to keep the same system. So that stuff matters. And Caleb Williams is in no different situation, but I think people just need to understand that what do they walk into? They're not saviors. They're quarterbacks.
And you gotta make the job easier for them. And this is why I always argue the fact of everybody keep telling me the running back position don't have no value. You must be out your mind. Because if you got somebody who can run the ball and he gonna make your job easier. So now, you know, when you go for a first down, go for a pass and go incomplete, and then your running back break an 8-yard run. Now instead of it being 3rd and 10, it's 3rd and 2. You know how much easier that makes your job? You got to respect it. You got to appreciate that. The most valuable thing to me, Sean, for a quarterback, obviously, is consistent coaching. If you got a good coach, do one consistent coach. So that's one consistent coach come with one the same consistent play call, the same consistent system, an O-line, and a running back. And then let's say, I know everybody going to argue, well, you know, you need to start receiving. Not necessarily, because I can argue that a good possession tight end or a good tight end will get the job done for you. You can get a couple. Don't get me wrong. We just seen it happen with the Chiefs. They just won again. What they had, a solid O-line, a good running game with Pacheco, and Travis Kelce as your possession of the tight end. You can make everything happen with your wide receivers. Don't get me wrong. Having a star receiver will make your job much easier, but I think when you go down the list of what you truly need as a quarterback, I think a star wide receiver could be last on that list, because I done seen teams win without AD, like, oh yeah, he's the number one guy receiver. Don't get me wrong. There's some teams that did, you know, got the Montanas with the West. Even Brady went undefeated the whole season and lost with Randy Moss at the Super Bowl. And people can't even tell me the star receiver on the Giants that year. If I ask the average person, who's the star receiver on the Giants? Who's the star receiver on the Chiefs? That are just recent one. When the Rams won, who was the, what are you going to say, Cooper Kupp? Like, you maybe say Cooper Kupp. Or when the 49ers just made it, who was really their star receiver? I know Ayuk just got paid. Deebo Samuel uses the combo, but it really was like Christian McCaffrey, his best friend, the running back. So I think the Bears kind of did I'm going to just say for now, because everything they kind of did Caleb Williams a little disjustice by not buff. I think the line should have been a priority. Swift was a good pickup. Maybe going to get Swift a little more time, but obviously Swift ain't look as good. But they going to have to buff this line for B-Shaw, for sure. I want to talk about this. Obviously, in the beginning of the show, y'all seen that we was talking about Real Texas on Facebook. Basically, in season 2, you got a little bit to know about us. But me and Sean did kind of forget to talk about our teams. My basketball team, I was going to be the Chicago Bulls. The baseball team, the Yankees. A team like the Chargers. I support all Chicago home teams, any home team in Chicago. In college, I like UConn, Spartan Dogs, and obviously football to come to Bama Roll Tide. Sean, obviously, if people listening are going to be listening to the audio, you obviously can't see Sean's background, but Sean teams is the Heat, the Florida State Seminoles, which I know you probably don't want to talk about them and that quarterback you got right now. We're going to leave that alone. Shout out DJ. Obviously, the Yankees, go Stripes. But and the Saints. Sean is a very good Saints fan. And the reason why I brought that up, so now for future reference, when you hear us talk about our team. But me and Sean, when we did our season predictions, it was kind of 50-50 on the Saints because of Derek Vehicle being their quarterback, which he has been looking solid, Sean. I'm not going to lie. The Saints blew out the Dallas Cowboys 44-19. The main guy of the story obviously got to be Alvin Kamara. 20 carries, 115 yards, 3 TDs. I believe two of them was in the first half, if not all three of them was in the first half, I can recall. Derek Carr went 11 for 16, 243 yards, 2 TDs, 1 interception. And then if you go back to game one, what, you know, I ain't really going, I'm going to take it with a grain of salt because they played the Panthers. But Derek Carr, I just want to bring up Derek Carr numbers again. He went 19 for 23, 200 yards, 3 touchdowns. So, Sean, I kind of broke a little bit. Is it that the Cowboys don't look as good as that we think they do? Or is we doubting the Saints and Derek Vehicle is actually that deal?
No, I think what it is, SB, is they changed offensive coordinators. Obviously, Pete Carmichael, longtime OC, who was the offensive coordinator, but also he took over play calling when Sean Payton left and was the play caller of the year. Sean Payton was suspended, is gone. And you bring in Clint Kubiak, who is of that Shanahan tree. His dad is Gary Kubiak, you know, longtime NFL coach, was a coach in Houston and also, I believe, in Denver as well when Denver won the Super Bowl with Peyton Manning. Mm-hmm. That system they run is what you see in San Fran, Rams, Green Bay. Minnesota runs. It's that system is very, very, I'll say quarterback friendly. You know, and again, it's the first year, it's the first couple games, but I thought Derek Carr has done a good job so far to start the season.
Did you call him Derek Carr, not Derek Vehicle?
He looking like I got to call him Carr when he plays like this, right? And you know, and my big issue with the Saints is not really so much Derek Carr; it was more Dennis Allen. I still don't care for Dennis Allen, but I realize Clint Kubiak is the big reason why this offense looks the way it looks. And again, I know when they hired him, I was talking with a few Saints fans, and I told them, I said, "This offense. Think about what Christian McCaffrey does in San Francisco. This is built for Alvin Kamara because they have very similar skill sets, whether people realize it or not." So, you know, it's been first couple games. It's cool. 2-0 is cool. But you got to sustain it. And, you know, let's see what happens. As far as the Cowboys concerned, they got punched in the mouth.
Yes, they did.
They got punched in the mouth yesterday. Was I upset with it? No, not at all. Do I think it's going to completely define the Cowboys season? No, I don't. But I do know we're not talking about games next week until Friday. But I do know they're going to have a very angry Ravens team coming to Dallas this coming weekend. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be a very, very telltale sign for the Cowboys' ability to rebound. But also, again, the thing I think people have realized about the Cowboys and what I thought was going to be fixed with Mike Zimmer was if you can run the football and particularly run at the Cowboys, you can dominate them. And I expect Derrick Henry next week to try to replicate what Alvin Kamara did yesterday, which is you get a full dose of Derrick Henry next week in Dallas, especially because they didn't bring him in. They didn't sign him. So, you know, I don't try to overreact over early weeks. 2-0 does not get you in the playoffs. 0-2 does not mean you'll miss the playoffs. Right. It's just the first 2 weeks. And, you know, some teams have come out the gate hot. Saints have. And some other teams have not, and that's it.
For me, I want to tip my hat, one, to the Saints, and shout out Alvin Kamara because as when it comes to football, everybody know I'm a big fan of the running backs. Running backs made me fall in love with the game of football. Shout out LT, Mr. Falk. So to see Alvin Kamara get busy like that, I love to see that. And obviously, he's still right now to this day, even back to the point of the end of like the Drew Brees era, Alvin Kamara is still the most valuable guy on that Saints team, and he still brings his value on that football field. But it got to be about this Dallas Cowboys team because a lot of guys just got paid, not to check nobody bank account. So obviously, you expect guys to play good. But this is the second year in a row where, like you brought up, where if you can run the ball, you're going to dominate the Cowboys every time. And as much as there are good, and I feel like they just a good pass rush team, which Michael Parsons, you got to take accountability of that. Like, you got to be able to stop the run, brother. I'm sorry. If you can't stop the run, I'm good luck to the Dallas Cowboys in the NFC. I'm trying to take good luck. You got Alvin Kamara. You got Saquon Barkley now. You got the duo with the Lions. The Packers got Josh Jacobs. It's a lot of good teams with running backs that you're going to have to run into to get past them. And if the glaring weakness keeps showing, bad enough they already paying their guys. So the Cowboys are not going to add nobody else soon to their team because now they got to pay Michael Parsons next year too. What are you going to add to buff the defense? Because y'all still have the same problem that y'all had last year. And that's what my concern comes at for the Cowboys. It's not against Dak, because I know we get it's fun to poke fun at the Cowboys and poke fun with the Cowboys fans of the show too. Shout out Action Jackson and a couple other people that watch his Cowboys fan. It is poke fun in that. And I like giving Dak a lot of smack talk, but let's not do that. Dak Prescott ain't no Daniel Jones bad. Dak Prescott ain't Bryce Young bad. Dak Prescott is a solid quarterback. He only get more smack talk because he played for Dallas. If he was anywhere else, Dak would probably get praised way more. But what the glaring elephant in the room is that the Dallas Cowboys run defense is suspect. And if your run defense is going to be suspect, you're going to lose all the time. All the time. There's no way. The Saints just dominated them, and it was really all Alvin Kamara. And what Alvin Kamara did was what we just talked about with Bryce Young and what we just talked about with Caleb Williams. The line, your line and your running back will make your job easy. Derek Carr looked phenomenal. He only threw the ball 16 times, and the team put up 44 points. If that not telling you what the value is of the team, come on now. That running back, that line, that dump off quick pass, that the running back make the job easier. So the Cowboys got to do something better.
And I want to just say this real quick, SB. You look at the Cowboys schedule just over the next few weeks. These are the running backs they're going to face. Derrick Henry.
Oh, wait.
We can skip over the Giants. They stink.
yeah, skip that one.
Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren.
With Justin Fields yeah, running the option too.
Right. David Montgomery. And
God.
Yeah.
Good God, bro.
David Montgomery and Alvin Kamara Jr. Mm-hmm. Then they had their bye week. Then potentially, again, not sure what his status will be, but potentially Christian McCaffrey after that. Mm-hmm. Then Bijan Robinson the week after that.
Good
then
God.
the week after that, they'll be seeing Mr. Barkley, Saquon Barkley. And then the week after that, they'll be seeing Joe Mixon. So to your point, these next several weeks, they get ready to see some running games and some running backs that, you know, may very well take advantage of them if they don't get the issues fixed. And then also, and conversely, you know, when you talk about them, you know, obviously not being able to stop the run, they're not running the football well at all either. So, you know, and, you know, again, I know it's early, but I think they're going to have to figure out a way to get those two things fixed if they want to get where they desire to be.
Yeah, that, you hit it right on the head with that one, Sean. We're going to see. But right now, how about them Cowboys? How about them Cowboys ain't looking too good? But I'm not going to lie, Sean. This next stretch of games is going to be – the only one that's going to be a gimme is the Giants. But them next stretch set of games, I'm not going to lie. If you were better – whoever the running back on there, put the TD part in. If they play the Cowboys, put the TD part in, brother. Oh, my God. Alvin Kamara looked like a proud Barry Sanders yesterday. It was ridiculous, bro. But also, I know we was just talking about, like, what's more valuable to a quarterback, the running back, the line, the tight end for possession. But in some situations, when you do have that star receiver, you got to find ways to get him the ball, Sean. And obviously, we were talking week one with the Arizona Cardinals, where they drafted Marvin Harrison Jr., arguably the best prospect in this draft, honestly. I'm thinking he might still be. Kyler Murray said during the first game it wasn't his job to get him the ball. Obviously, everybody looked at him sideways because your first job in your description is throw the ball to your best players. And if your best player is Marvin Harrison Jr., you got to find a way to give him the ball. Well, Sean, I'm going to say this. Kyler Murray got the message, and he found a way to give Marvin Harrison Jr. the ball. Kyler Murray went 17 for 21, 266 yards, 3 TDs. Two of those TDs, by the way, came from Marvin Harrison Jr., who had 4 receptions, 130 yards for 2 TDs, 1 spectacular catch in the end zone. And I think for the 4 incompletions, so Marvin Harrison Jr. probably could have had better. I think like 2 of them was from Marvin Harrison, not all 4 of them. But I digress. Who's going to complain about it? Because you see the potential star power of what this could have be, what this could be with Marvin Harrison Jr. You got to give him the ball. I'm sorry. I do not care. If you don't have no other problem where it's like, oh, my line protected me. I got a Connor who can run the ball solidly, which he did. But you got a star rookie receiver where it was moments in the game, week one game, when he was wide open, and you didn't get the ball. No, you got to do better. So I'm glad Kyler got the message. What is your reaction to Kyler Murray getting the message? Maybe somebody sent him through the Xbox chat or through the Call of Duty messenger. I know you still got to get the game jokes in. I'm sorry. Sorry, Kyler. We got to get it in. It's almost October. But what was your reaction to Kyler Murray getting the message to give MHJR the ball?
I mean, again, one catch for 4 yards last week is not good enough. I think he had 3 targets. This week, obviously, there was a deliberate, attempt to get him the football. He had 8 targets. So certainly, 4 catches, the 130. And I think he had all those in the first quarter, if I'm not mistaken. So, I would say, obviously, yeah, they want to find ways to get him the ball. Now, again, it's a very fine line. I remember there was a coach back in the day who coached Minnesota Vikings named Mike Tice. And Mike Tice had this thing, they called it the Randy ratio. And it was basically 40% of their passes needed to go to Randy Moss. Dante Culpepper was the quarterback. And you generally don't want to announce you're going to do that, right? Like, yeah, you understand, teams understand, hey, listen, this is their best receiver, one of the best receivers in the league, one of the best receivers of all time. We wanted to get him the football. But to say, oh, yeah, 40% of our passes have to go to Randy Moss was insane. So the Randy ratio, it was weird. Let's just say it was weird.
I mean, it worked a little bit sometimes, though, because Randy going to get the ball regardless. Randy going to get it.
Yeah, but the problem is that you make the mistake of you're not going through your progressions, right? Mm-hmm. You're locking in on one guy. Teams know you're locking in on one guy, that percentage of the time. You got to let quarterbacks be quarterbacks, right?
Yes.
It's not that you say, hey, how many times are we going to try to get this guy the ball? It's no. Are we putting this guy in the position to get the ball where, again, we're taking advantage of mismatches and things like that? That's all Arizona's got to do with Marvin Harrison. He is – we know what his potential is. We know what his lineage is. Mm-hmm. Now it's just them continuing to find ways to get him the ball. But my fantasy team thanks him, Kyler Murray, for yesterday for getting Marvin Harrison Jr. the ball, because I do have Marvin Harrison Jr. on the squad. But, but in all seriousness, no. Just, again, process. You don't have to force it. He's good enough that you know if you give him a chance, he's going to make a play for you, and certainly he did yesterday.
Yes, he did. But, Sean, who did make plays? The Cincinnati Bengals. They are all roar and no bite. They choked the game away 26-25 to the Kansas City Chiefs, where we can all say rarely that Patrick Mahomes had a relatively bad game. Under his stats, 18 for 25, 151 yards, two TDs, two interceptions. Joe Burrow, who actually played pretty solid, 23 for 36, 258 yards, two TDs. But the penalties ruined the Bengals. One with the sportsmanlike conduct, but Jamar Chase that took them out of field goal range. Yes. And then the pass interference on fourth down that could have ended the game by the Bengals on defense put the Chiefs in field goal range, and they iced them, got them up out of there. So my point, and we can make it quick because it's so funny that the Bengals, which I wish they would play this hard and play this locked in against any other team because they didn't look like this last week. It's crazy that you wake up and play against for the Chiefs. But I won't. Bengals fans and the Bengals players to wake up and smell the coffee and the reality of the fact about this team that they're not as good as they think they is. And we also were just talking about the last show how James Jones called out that Joe Burrow's overrated and he don't look as good as he do because he really got the weapons and you pay to everybody, you're going to lose all the weapons and things that's going on with your team. But if you can wake up and look this solid against the Chiefs because you talked all that smack and you talking about y'all the team to beat in the AFC, which you guys are not, because y'all had one Super Bowl appearance years ago and did not win. You said that to the two-time defending back-to-back champions on a possible three-peat. You choked the game away with Patrick Mahomes having a bad game and you did two bad penalties to screw yourself. I just think the Bengals need to, and I hate to say it like this because I know it was like a thing with the shut up and dribble, but zip it and play football, brother. Y'all got to lock back in. That's my take on the Bengals. What about you, Sean?
Well, I think two things yesterday stood out for me. Number one, Kansas City ran the ball yesterday more than they threw it. They had 32 rushing attempts for 149 yards. Mm-hmm. As a team, Isaiah Pacheco, who obviously they lost yesterday to a broken fibula, led the way with 90 yards on 19 carries. They deliberately wanted to run the football. They wanted to control clock, time, possession, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. The Bengals did not run the football very well yesterday, which, again, for me going into this season, that was a huge concern. And even though, yes, Kansas City did win the game, you know, it's them finding a way to win these games, I think, are good for them in their quest to go, you know, for three in a row, just because they know they got to be sharper as well. But the other thing that stood out for me in the game were two things. Number one, Kansas City left tackle situation. They're going to have to get that figured out. I know it's early, but they got to get that situation figured out because I don't know, again, against the right matchup, somebody, you know, will take advantage of that. And then secondly, I have an issue with the broadcast team yesterday. Tony Romo and Jim Nance called the game, and a dude named Wanye Morris – caught a touchdown pass, and they didn't make not a single Boys to Men reference. They need to do better.
You know, Darwell, they know Tony Romo going to know no Boys to Men. He probably don't know a Boys to Men song, man.
Boys to Men was so commercial, you better know who Boys to Men was. No, but no, in all seriousness, no. I mean, I think, again, at the end of the day, you know, they did what they had to do to win the game. And, you know, shout out to the Chiefs. And again, Bengals, you know, you got to tighten up. You're not good enough to talk all this smack and go out and put on the performance you put on yesterday. And again, you can't shoot yourself in the foot either, especially playing somewhere like Arrowhead where you know it's Kansas City. So, you know, like, come on. But we can move on. I'm tired of talking about that 0-2 team. We can move on.
I'm glad that you said you done talking about this 0-2 team, but sorry, Sean, we got to talk about another 0-2 team, which I wasn't expected to go 0-2. The Ravens, after losing the game to the Raiders, they are now 0-2. Is it time to hit the alert button, Sean?
Not at all. Okay. Not at all. First of all, nobody had them beating the Chiefs on Thursday Night Football to open the season. right? They lost a tough game yesterday. Two things. Number one, Todd Monken, Derrick Henry's in the backfield. Get him the football. Get him the football. That's the first thing. The second thing is in the second half, I don't know what happened with the Ravens and this giving up leads. They've given up, I want to say they've blown 10-point leads like six times since 2002 in the fourth quarter. That's not good. So there's something going on, again, where they're going to have to get that figured out. But is it time to panic? No. It's time to get back to playing Raven football. Now, to me, they have two primary issues. One, their offensive line. Three new starters on the offensive line, and I don't see a continuity on that offensive line yet. But, again, I think that'll come. And then on the defensive line, they don't get the pressures that we're used to seeing the Ravens get. They're not getting the same pressures. So, again, they've lost a lot of pieces over the last couple of years. You know, I think, again, this is going to be a process. But do you – the Ravens are – and I say this with all respect – they are the cousins of the Steelers in that they are not a team that panics. They're not an organization that panics. They just got to get back to doing what they do well. But Todd Monken, we looking at you because, again, you brought in Derrick Henry. You got to use Derrick Henry, particularly down in the red zone. Use Derrick Henry. Let's not get cute. Let's use Derrick Henry.
Yeah, if I'm in a red zone, I don't give. We learned from what happened with Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks and why they lost Super Bowl. When you got a guy that's that powerful who can knock down probably the whole line plus his O-line with it pushing forward, anytime in a red zone, 90% of the time he's getting the ball. And then when you got the ability to run an option with him and Lamar Jackson, you know how dangerous that is in a red zone? Do that. But Sean, for me, I think it is time to hit the button. For one reason that you brought up, one, giving up leads in the fourth quarter, and it's not even that the offensive line is my concern. Yeah, even though that's a question mark. The reason why I'm hitting the red button is because this Ravens defense was one of the best defensive teams in the league last year. And it was questions about, like, them winning because of their defense was so good. Them giving up leads like this and playing the part on their defense, there's no way. Gardner Minshew was going 30 for 38, 276 yards, one TD. They had a TD. And Devontae Adams, which is great, with 110 yards, one TD. The problem is y'all gave up 13 points in the fourth quarter. 13 points in the fourth quarter against the Raiders. And this y'all are a team competing for a Super Bowl. The Raiders are competing for a wild card spot. The Ravens' defense has to improve. For the Ravens to win or to be where they want to be, their defense has to be ranked in the top three. Not even top five no more, top three. And also, their defense has to play better than their offense every single game. Because I think Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, I think they're going to improve on that, but giving Derrick Henry the ball and the line going to learn. But the bread and butter of this Ravens team is their defense. And they got all the weapons on defense. You got Roquan. You got Hamilton. You got the guys that you need to get the job done. This defense was outstanding last year. And I don't – ever since that playoff game, I don't know, Sean, but that giving up lead things has to stop. The Ravens should be shut down. Gardner Minshew should not be looking like, hey, maybe Gardner Minshew should be starting. That's a backup quarterback. And he looked at like – he looked – I want to say Brock Purdy-ish. He looked at Patrick Mahomes as Brock Purdy-ish. He looked at good. And this is I was expecting the Baltimore Ravens shutout, lockdown defense. The defense, I thought the defense was gonna do everything. I thought it was gonna be an easy day in the office for Lamar Jackson and his offense, and it was the complete opposite. It was a nightmare for both sides, where the Ravens defense gave up 26 points to the Las Vegas Raiders.
And again, I don't want to take anything away from what the Raiders did, because I think the Raiders obviously are a solid football team.
Solid, yes.
But again, did anybody pick them to win yesterday? No, I think 98% of the country picked the Ravens to win the game, right? There was the expectation. Ravens had had 10 days to get ready for this game. I thought, again, in the first half, they started out a little slow, but again, they got, you know, their flow going. But again, to your point, you know, when they're up, you're supposed to, their job is to hold on to the lead, and they didn't do it. And again, you know, they ran the football pretty well yesterday as a team. But if you want to, when you have a great defense, a lot of reasons, one of the reasons why you have a great defense, SB, is because you run the football, right? Mm-hmm. You protect your defense with the running game. You play ball control. Your defense isn't on the field too long. Again, mm-hmm. they had five sacks yesterday, but the majority of those were in the first three quarters. And again, mm-hmm. when they needed to make a play, the Ravens weren't able to make the plays defensively. So there's no panic. Again, fix what you can fix. Get ready to go to Dallas this weekend and go beat up on the Cowboys and play Ravens football. That, to me, is what they got to get back to. If they do that, they'll be fine.
If they go 0-3, then would you hit the alert button now or no?
Certainly, yeah. When you go 0-3, it's harder to make the playoffs and certainly to even win your division.
And they're in a tough division.
So, yeah. So, I think, you know, certainly, yes, you do understand that there's, you know, so there'll be some concern. But, I, again, they're not a team that panics. That's just not what they do.
Yeah, agree. And obviously coming up, Sean, which we go ahead and knock out these last little couple of stories, because it's coming up is the Eagles versus the Falcons. So let's go ahead and do our Eagles versus Falcons preview. Sean, what do you expect from tonight's game?
I expect the Eagles to win. They're at home again. They have no A.J. Brown tonight, but they do have Saquon. They still have Devontae Smith. They still have Dallas Goedert. Want to see, again, you know, their ability to spread the ball around. They traded for Jahan Dotson late in training camp. You know, I expect him to get mm-hmm. some run tonight, obviously, with A.J. Brown out. And then defensively, you know, can they pick up, you know, where they left off in, you know, against Green Bay and Brazil? And also, you know, the big thing for me in this game is they're playing against Kirk Cousins, who in prime time usually craps the bed. So mm-hmm. I don't expect, unless, again, the only chance for the Falcons is that Bijan Robinson has the game of his life. So I'm looking forward to this matchup, but I expect the Eagles to win.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this matchup, obviously, because of the running back matchup, Saquon versus Bijan Robinson. I'm expecting a masterclass, another masterclass game for Saquon Barkley. Probably another 2-TD game, man. Put that bet in if you want to. Probably another 2-TD game. It's at home in Philly. I think the game will be close in the beginning, but then I think the Eagles might take off late. I got the Eagles winning. Like you said, the main big thing that concerns me is Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins at primetime lights ain't really that good. And also, he's on a new team, still trying to figure it out. Obviously, and he didn't look good against Steelers.
And he doesn't look healthy. Like, he looks like a guy that's still laboring with that Achilles. Because I know people forget, but he got his Achilles injury much later than Aaron Rodgers did. Yes, so, did. You know, so I don't think he's fully healthy. And if he can't protect himself tonight, you know, I'm not saying we're going to see it, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see a Penix sighting tonight if he can't protect himself.
Mm-hmm. Hey, no matter what, Penix sighting. Speaking of people with the injury bug, you know, we got to go ahead and do our injury bug. What's the biggest injury bug hit of the week for you, Sean? Who is it?
I will say it's probably Isaiah Pacheco going out for the Chiefs. You know, he had become their number one back. Obviously, they have P. Ryan. They have Jared McKinnon. They got a young guy on their practice squad who's actually my little cousin with the TCU, who's a running back. I don't know if they'll bring him up. But I think they should potentially go out and – I know people don't think it's crazy. I think you should call Kareem Hunt and see what his availability is. You know, see if there's a – it's been a while. I know there were some things that happened late when he was there that caused them to release him. But, you know, let's just, you know, have a conversation with Kareem Hunt and see what happens. But Isaiah Pacheco for me, SB.
Yeah. How long is he out? Because he broke what? What did he break?
He broke his fibula. So he's basically got a broken leg. 6 to 8 weeks is the timetable, but 6 weeks is pushing. It's probably going to be longer, closer to that 8 week period.
Oh, for me, it has to be, and I don't know how long Jetta is out. I'm going to look it up, but I'm going Vikings losing Justin Jefferson. Obviously, Sam Darnold has been looking very well. But obviously Justin Jefferson has to play a big part of that. So now it's like, even though I didn't expect too much from the Minnesota Vikings this year, but losing a guy like Justin Jefferson is a big hit for a guy like Sam Darnold. Now I'm expecting, I don't know how long Justin Jefferson is going to be out, but now I'm expecting to the Vikings to be about what I expect them to be this year now. Because when you lose a weapon like that.
It's a quad injury. He's saying he'll play against the Texans. Obviously, with a quad injury, you know, they want to be careful depending on the depth of the quad injury, but we'll see.
I think if it's only like maybe like a little strain or something with his quad, I think he should sit out this one and then next week play again. Because it's like the Vikings are not going competing for a Super Bowl. Don't risk being out for the whole season again. But that is all our NFL stories. Thank you guys for going along with us. But we still have more to go. I know everybody ready to run to that game, but we got a couple NBA stories to get into. Heat will be honoring D-Wade with a statue in October. One thing I want to say, Sean, I know you want to go cook up on this. You are the consensus Heat fan of the show. I think well-deserved, well-earned, arguably one of the greatest Heat players of all time. Obviously, I want to ask you that question, too. When is your go? Is D-Wade the greatest Heat player of all time? I wonder what pose they're going to use for D-Wade, too. But I think well-deserved by Flash. Top five shooting guard of all time, depending on where you put him. I got him top, top five in that conversation. D-Wade was phenomenal, changed the game of basketball during his era, played one of the best two guards of his era right behind Kobe. D-Wade was just phenomenal. So I think this well-deserved, real honor, Hall of Fame, shout-out Flash. And the more and more I'm getting the vibe now of – I'm getting to that unk status of old now. Like, all my players I watched growing up getting old now, dog. It's crazy. I just seen Kobe's whole career. I watched D-Wade's career from rookie. Now I watch him get the statue, Sean. This is crazy, bro. I just seen Dirk got it. Dirk on the court now. Like, Dirk got a statue. Hey, I just see AI get a statue. I'm turning up, man. This is crazy, Sean. This is crazy. But what's your reaction to D-Wade getting a statue revealed in October? Is he the greatest Heat player of all time? And what pose do you think they go? What iconic D-Wade pose, the D-Wade moment they're going to use for the statue?
If I had to pick one pose, my initial thought would be the dunk over Anderson Varejão.
Ooh.
I have in my office space, I have a picture of the big three. All together, and they're all going in for dunks at the same time. Obviously, it's a doctored picture, but it's obviously from gameplay. I think it would be the Anderson Varejão pose for me. That would be the one that I would hope they use. Again, is he the greatest Heat player of all time? Yes, without question. He is... You said top five. He is the third greatest shooting guard of all time, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You can try to put other guys over him. I will tell you exactly why those guys are not over him. He's earned this. And certainly, you know, it's always an honor. Great when you get a chance to honor, the legends of your team. And certainly he's right there. He's the first one to get a statue. I think there'll be some others that may come later on, but he needed to be the first. He wasn't going to be the first to get his jersey retired, but he did need to be the first to get his statue, outside of Castilla Center. So, yeah.
Yeah, let me know where you guys rank the Flash D-Wade all-time and all-time shooting guard.
And if it's lower than three, choke yourself.
Shooting guard-wise.
Yes, yes.
One more story, and then we got to get into our picks recap of the week. Obviously, SB is up 1-0. So, Sean, it was a story about ranking every coach coming into the NBA season. It's by Sam Quinn of CBA Sports. Obviously, they use a certain criteria, and you can go ahead and check out the story on CBS Sports. I had a problem with this list, though, Sean. A couple things. We're going to go through it. I just want to go through three main names. Obviously, the first name, obviously go from lowest to highest, 30-1. J.J. Redick was ranked as the worst coach out of all coaches. But he did put him in a tier saying we don't know enough about him. Obviously, he's a newer coach. But people will see that J.J. Redick is ranked last and take something wrong with it. How do you feel about J.J. Redick being ranked as the 30th coach in the NBA?
I mean, what is J.J. Redick as a coach?
Nothing yet.
Nothing. Mm-hmm. So he's done nothing. He ain't nobody. He don't deserve to be over nobody. He's done nothing. He could be. He could end up being the worst coach in the history of the NBA.
It's a possibility.
Don't think he will, but he could. So no, he doesn't deserve to be ranked because he ain't done nothing. Right? Mm-hmm. You got to do something. Get some dirt on your suit or whatever you're gonna be wearing on the sidelines before we talk about where you rank. So no, he doesn't deserve to be ranked. He ain't nobody. He ain't never been nobody. He got his job because he did a podcast with LeBron. Everybody knows it. This could be a complete dumpster fire.
We was watching the job interview, Sean, honestly.
Literally. We literally watched the job interview. It was a good podcast. You know, it was a good job interview. But the fact is we don't know what he is. And, you know, until he does something of any significance, he's right where he belongs.
And for anybody else who will be like, oh, no, Sean, you just said that it's not really a job interview. All I'm saying is, and I'm gonna open up my YouTube real quick. I forgot the name of the podcast. What was the name of the podcast again?
Mind the Game podcast,
right? All I'm saying is, ever since J.J. Redick got hired, the last episode they dropped was 3 months ago.
Right.
So if that ain't said it was a job interview, I don't know what. I'm just saying, the podcast is over. Lakers head coach. But the episode's at. We're going to keep getting episodes until he got hired. That's all it is. Shout out LeBron with the master play. But the next one, and this is where my concerns come in. Greg Popovich was not ranked in the top 10 coaches. He was ranked 14th.
Yes.
And I get it. They try to use that he hasn't won since 2017. The team has been rebuilding, which that's probably the main part of it, that the team has been rebuilding. But when you look at, like I said, when I was looking at the other guys, they gave them some stuff in the past, like the guy that was at number one. So I feel like in the people I'm looking ahead of, that was ahead of Pop, we got Mike Brown, Chris Finch, Joe Mozzarella Stigma from the Celtics, Big Tibbs. Got Budenholzer at 9 with the Suns is crazy to me. Emi Udoka, if anybody I take out, it'd be Budenholzer with the Suns. But I guarantee Budenholzer probably getting that little boost because of what he did with the Bucks. I don't think there's no world, and I don't care how bad Greg Popovich is as a team has been. Coach Budenholzer has never been a better coach than Greg Popovich. I don't care what metric you're using it in.
Can I make an argument for why he's not ranked in the top 10? Mm-hmm. It would be the same reason if Bill Belichick came back to coach in the NFL. Mm-hmm. If you were doing an NFL coaches list, that there would be people who would not put Bill Belichick in the top 10. It's not saying that he does not have a top 10 career. Mm-hmm. It's more what has he done recently and where is he today? Mm-hmm. When you talk about Greg Popovich, obviously all the success – from Popovich comes with Tim Duncan, right? Mm-hmm. And again, a big part of the success was you had Tim Duncan, who is probably the most low maintenance superstar ever.
Mm-hmm.
And guys had to get in line basically because if Pop could do this to Tim and talk to Tim this way, we can't say anything. Now that Tim is gone, has he been able to foster the same relationships with the Kawhi Leonards and with the LaMarcus Aldridge? Mm-hmm. You know, they're big, you know, him, Kawhi didn't always, you know, obviously there was issues around the injury, and certainly with LaMarcus Aldridge, there was issues around how LaMarcus was being used, and Greg Popovich did go to LaMarcus Aldridge and apologize. Mm-hmm. But the point is, it's like, it's more, where is he today?
Right.
And the thing about the ranking too, SB, is again, if he starts to have that success with Victor Wembanyama and with this current iteration of the Spurs over the next couple of years, he's going to go back up on the list. So he's going to show, hey, it just wasn't all because of Tim Duncan. You know, and again, most people, so there's some people who have Greg Popovich as the greatest NBA coach of all time.
Which he is.
I wouldn't argue it. There's guys I could argue, but I wouldn't argue it because we understand who Greg Popovich is as a head coach. I think, again, the big thing is, where is he today comparative to his peers? And there were just some other guys who, again, have done some things innovatively, who bring some things to those teams and who kind of, you know, are the ties that raise the ship of the teams that they're coaching. Bud is a great example because, obviously, Bud, his coaching is with Atlanta and Milwaukee. He was very successful in both places. What have they done since he left? And now he's going to Phoenix, and that team, a lot of people believe, is really tailor-made for what he wants to do, particularly offensively, which is shoot a bunch of threes and get a bunch of layups. So I think, again, it comes down to, just where he is today. But it's not a slight. It's just where he is today.
Okay, I agree with that. Last coach on the list, your guy, Eric Spoelstra, is ranked as the number one coach in the NBA. I'm not mad at it because I seen the growth of Eric Spoelstra where he got thrown into the fire or thrown into the heat, no pun intended, with the big three. A lot of people questioned him as a coach. A lot of people didn't give him credit as a coach. This last little recent run that he did with the Heat, especially with like the Jimmy Butlers and having the team as good as they is, people finally start respecting Eric Spoelstra. So I'm not mad at Spo being ranked number one. And it would be hard to like, and I'm looking at who's behind him. You got Nick Nurse at two, Rick Carlisle at the Pacers at three, Steve Curry at four, Ty Lue at five. Yeah, I don't see nobody else you could really put over Spo into right now.
Yeah, and keep in mind, they did tiers. So they have tiers, and they define each tier as this is what it is. So that second tier, they have Spo in a tier by himself. That second tier is all the guys they think are basically in that same class. The Ty Lue, obviously the Rick Carlisle's, the Steve Kerr's. So, you know, it's just where they have guys ranked in the tiers. But again, at the end of the day, they believe Eric Spoelstra is the number one coach in the NBA, and they give explanation for why they have each coach ranked where they rank based on the methodology they put together. So we're not going to go all the way through it, but it's a good article to read, and it's a good understanding of how they view coaches. That's all.
Yeah, so if you guys want to check out the article, go to CBS Sports. Look up ranking NBA coaches for the 2024 to 25 season. The article is wrote by Sam Quinn.
Sam Quinn,
so go check it out. Before we get into picks, one more thing that has just came up on my feed right here, Sean, looking at the CBS article. Celtics ownership reportedly need to sell the team due to loss of money over payroll. Whoa. So now when you usually see things like this, this should be a shockingly to you because obviously usually a lot of owners on the team, very wealthy, not necessarily saying that they got deep pockets, that you just worry about paying the luxury taxes. But this is a historic franchise like the Boston Celtics. What's the concern, Sean? What's going on?
Yeah, so basically, you know, the rising cost of paying players, plus obviously SB, also the luxury tax of, you know, or a team constantly being in the luxury tax as the Celtics are. They're looking at after this coming season, the 25-26 season, as being incredibly expensive. They're going to be paying about $80 million this season in luxury tax just with their current roster. And that's just in luxury tax. That's not to mention, obviously, what they're going to be paying, you know, players. Next year, once Jason Tatum's extension kicks in, starting the 25-26 season, is going to get even crazier, and also Derek White's extension as well. So, plus, you know, trying to retain Porzingis potentially, who's not signed long term. So, you know, this is what they're saying is, hey, listen, it's just going to be very, very expensive. You know, ownership doesn't want to operate in the red consistently, and so, you know, they need someone – potentially to come in and with deeper pockets who may not be willing, who may be willing to say, hey, we're willing to pay this amount of money, you know, in luxury tax, and we don't mind writing big checks. But, you know, the Grossbeck family, Whit Grossbeck, who's the general partner for the team, is looking at the landscape and basically saying, hey, we may not be able to do this, you know, long term. It's going to be interesting to see. We talked the other day, SB, about expansion. Yes. This is one of the reasons why the league is not ready for expansion. That Celtic situation and the Wolves situation has to be figured out first in terms of the ownership of those teams. And then they'll look at expansion. But that's all. It's just this is the new – with the new CBA. And, again, the luxury tax, the new CBA, and the cost of operating in this new landscape – it's going to be difficult for some of these ownership groups to hang on to teams and turn a profit.
Yeah, if we keep getting like this, I ain't going to lie. The players' payroll will keep going high. Everybody going to have to be Steve Ballmer with the pockets and something to afford the team, because you got to pay somebody $500 million contract alone after 5 years. That's going to be tough. It's the money going to keep growing and growing. But today is Monday, so we got to do the recap picks of the week, Sean. Obviously, last week, SB has won, and I was winning 1-0, so we started off 1-0. Sean is looking to get his get back right now, so let's go ahead and see who won this week.
All right, so New Orleans at Dallas, we both picked the Cowboys. Obviously, New Orleans won. Vegas at Baltimore, we both picked the Ravens. Ravens lost. Cleveland at Jacksonville. I took Cleveland. You took Jacksonville. That's one for me. Mm-hmm. Jets at Tennessee. You took the Jets. I took Tennessee. Yeah, the Jets obviously won.
1-1.
San Francisco at Minnesota. You took San Fran. I took Minnesota. Minnesota won. Mm-hmm. Chargers at Carolina. We both took the Chargers. Chargers won. Seattle at New England. Both took Seattle. Seattle won. Giants at Washington. Washington won.
Yeah, no question about that.
We both took Washington. Tampa Bay at Detroit. We both took Detroit. Tampa Bay won.
Big Baker. Looking good.
Indianapolis at Green Bay. You took the Colts. I took the Packers. The Packers won.
Jeez Louise.
Rams at Arizona. We both took the Rams. Arizona won. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh at Denver, we both took the Steelers. The Steelers won. Mm-hmm. Cincinnati at Kansas City, we both took the Chiefs. The Chiefs won. Chicago at Houston, we both took the Texans. The Texans won. So this tonight's game does not matter. I did tie it up. And the order is restored in the Matrix.
The order is unfortunately restored. We are at 1-1. A lot of upsets this week. It sucks. It definitely sucks. It definitely tough, but it's cool. We started the season off hot, but now we back 1-1. We go keep it going. I told you, it's the revenge. It's the revenge year, man. We lost last year, but he said SB got washed. Yeah, I did, man. 1-1. Yeah, we just started back. Go. We back at it. We back at it again. So obviously, Sean, season 2 of Real Takes Over Fake Debates, officially episode 1. So obviously, if you guys new to the show or new listening on any other platform, which we're going to be on, especially the audio, we're going to be new to the audio platform. Whatever episode, we pick a number, player that we like with that jersey number. We already went through like 100. It started getting shaky once we got into like, what was like the 60s or the 70s? It started getting like, 60s was definitely shaky. Number one, who you got, Shar?
Two guys, Warren Moon and Anthony Hardaway.
Anthony Hardaway, I like it. I got to keep this, but one player only, Sean O'Brien's, my favorite player of all time, my favorite player. Number one, got to go Derrick Rose. Chicago kid, got to pick the hometown brother. We're going to go Derrick Rose.
Yo, let me get some love to Miami Heat, Chris Bosh, too.
Got to get Chris Bosh some love. So we appreciate you guys watching the show. Thank you guys for tuning in. It's been another great episode of Real Takes Over Fake Debates with SB Talk Sports and Sean Webb. And we will see you guys on Friday. Salute.
Yeah.